Now, we're talking about wolves, right? Among other things.
We'll call to order the Senate Committee on the Environment and Natural Resources. Today is the 18th of February, and we have two items on the agenda today. We are going to actually start with the public hearing on House Bill 4007, because we have a very short list of people to testify, one of whom came from a long way away and will be leaving right after that. And then we will move to House Bill 4040. And so anyway, to start with, I will open up the public hearing on House Bill 4007. And if Patrick Perry and Doug Graff could come forward, that would be great. Go ahead.
Chair Edwards, honorable senators, I'm here today to speak to this bill 4007 in favor. This bill helps Wheeler County.
Name for the record.
Oh, Judge Patrick C. Perry. This bill helps my county in particular because of our unprotected lands. And if you read in this white paper from my sheriff, we've recently took on the responsibility of fighting fire with through our Office of Emergency Management on our 500 plus thousand acres of unprotected lands. And as when we started this, we didn't realize the costs associated with insurance and workman's comp for our volunteers. So to create a sustainable protection on these lands, we're requesting that in this bill language that would allow us to have the same benefit that the other RFPAs, Rural Fire Protection Agencies, that are being created will basically the same benefits that they have as far as their insurance and administrative costs. You wonder what's in this for the state. How can this help the state? But these lands are unprotected. Nobody's there to put out the lightning strike fires on them. And so when a fire gets started, it has the potential to get big and then move over onto your state protected lands. And by the time it gets there, it's a large fire, and it takes a lot of resources and money to put it out. So the advantage that I see to the state is that by supporting us in a small way, which we do get a lot of support from the state as far as training and equipment, surplus equipment, but this allows us to help put these fires out when they're small and keep them from becoming a big expense to the state. So I'll answer any questions you have of me if you have any questions.
Okay. Thank you. Go ahead.
Good afternoon, Chair Edwards, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Doug Graff. I serve as the Chief of Fire Protection for Oregon Department of Forestry. I'm here available today to answer any questions on the House bill before you. Also to recognize the important role that Rangeland Protective Associations play in the complete and coordinated fire protection system statewide. You have my written testimony before you filed in OLIS. I'd like to add just a couple comments beyond the testimony there. Currently, across the state, we operate with 20 Rangeland Protection Associations in place. As Judge Perry mentioned, these are all volunteer-based organizations for fire protection and play a critical role for the system. They have 800 volunteers statewide. And these are ranchers, landowners, helping each other out, supporting each other in the effort on fire protection. And they're responsible for all the costs of fire suppression and that complete effort. So they fall outside of the department's jurisdiction specifically. So this bill currently adds another pathway in order for Rangeland Protective Associations to form. They currently form through the Board of Forestry Authority. Rangeland Protection Associations have been in place since 1963 with enabling legislation made at that time. And in the last 10 years, we've seen the most growth with Rangeland Protective Associations. They cover approximately 4.6 million acres of protection in eastern Oregon right now. And there's approximately 1 million acres of unprotected land that's yet to be covered by Rangeland Protective Associations. So in reviewing this bill, it's a well-written bill. It seems reasonable and rational approach to create another pathway for counties to engage in the development of those RPAs. And once they're developed, they become part of the system like all the other RPAs, as Judge Perry mentioned. I'm available for any questions.
Question for either of you. Judge Perry, this would, the way it's written, it would apply to your county. Are there other counties for that would also qualify? I was just reading how it was written. You must have 200,000 or more acres of rangeland that are outside of any forest protection district. Doug mentioned that there are a number of, a million acres, you said?
Yes, sir.
So, but I don't know how that's divided up by county, so.
Chair Edwards, we have 500,000 of them acres, okay. So there would be also other counties that would have, I believe, Harney County, and I don't know if Lake County may have the same. May have over 200,000 acres unprotected. But as you see in the bill, it's there's a 200,000 acre clause that if we fall under 2,000 acres of unprotected, then we're out of the firefighting business. But in my opinion, that's a success because we've allowed other RFPAs to come in and maybe more localized sources to protect them lands. But I believe there would be more counties than just Wheeler County affected.
I was fortunate, I guess unfortunate enough to see a forest fire start in, actually it was more like a range fire start over in Montana. And we went over and looked at it, and there was all different kind of fire groups out there, and they're all arguing about whose land it was on and who was going to fight it. Do you guys do that, or do you just, when you see a fire start, you just jump on it?
Chair Edwards, Senator Olson. This, we've been doing this for 2 years now, and we are in the chain of fire command. We're familiar with that's an asset that we pose to, because the state and the federal government have a chain of fire command and incident commander and initial attack, and how you transmit that to the next authority. And know that that is definitely not an issue, and I believe it's an asset because of the training that the state puts on that teaches these RFPAs, that fire command and how fire command is structured.
A follow-up. Mm-hmm. And the reason I asked that question is we had a fire just, I guess, last year or a year before out in Estacada, and that was on Forest Service land, and they took their time to call their people in, and they were a long way away, and Estacada was close, but Estacada got called second. They probably could have had the fire put down, but it burned an awful lot of land because of that. And I just wondered how your process was, that if somebody sees a fire, somebody goes to it and puts it out right away.
Chair Edwards, Senator Olson.
Thank you, by the way. Thanks for that. He can do that.
How we're situated in my county is we don't have any federal sources in our county. No federal agencies have fire fighting capability in the county. The only entity is there local is the state forestry, and they have a large portion of protected lands that they're obligated by. They gather tax. The county gathers taxes for them, an assessment, and they have their hands full on their protected, and we're just assisting with the unprotected lands. As far as the no federal footprint, that means that the Forest Service or BLM that do have lands in our county, by the time they get there to work on the fire, we a lot of times have already engaged the fire under initial attack and have it either managed, contained, or even put out to turn it over to them when they do get there on their lands. We have mutual aid agreements with all entities, whether it be BLM, Forest Service, State Forestry, and even our other existing RFPAs in our county. Wheeler County Fire and Rescue, our county organization, provides by contract initial attack for Twickenham RF, Rural Fire Protection Agency, because of their makeup of farmers that they have. A lot of times during haying and whatnot, they can't field initial attacks, so they felt that if we had the assets available, that they would let us do their initial attack. And we're not excluding them from that. We're just, if we can provide a quicker initial attack, we do.
Okay. Thank you.
Other questions? All right. Thank you both.
Thank you.
So is there anybody else that wanted to testify on House Bill 4007? Those were the only folks that were signed up. So seeing none, we're going to close the public hearing on House Bill 4007. And we're going to move to the other item on our agenda, which is House Bill 4040. We're going to open up a public hearing on House Bill 4040A. We're continuing from our last meeting, taking testimony from the folks that had signed up at the last meeting, but we ran out of time to get everybody in on the wolf issue. So we're going to start out by calling up Stephanie Taylor and Brian Posowitz and Rhett Lawrence and Christy Split. If we could get four of you in there, that would be great. And then we'll have a panel. The next panel will be Paul Don Hefner, Tim Reeves, Marianne Nash.
Good afternoon, Chair Edwards, committee members. My name is Stephanie Taylor, and I'm a wildlife advocate from Portland, Oregon. Last year, I testified at almost every ODF&W commission meeting and was one of the many who requested an independent scientific review of the commission's biological status review as required by law. I also testified against a similar bill introduced by Representative Barreto last session, House Bill 3515, which sought to legislatively delist wolves weeks before the ODF&W had the opportunity to carry out its own delisting process. First, I want to thank Senator Dambro and Senator Przanski for asking critical questions about the delisting process and reasons behind the litigation, all of which were ignored in the House last week. I have compiled much of the information that you requested at Tuesday's hearing. Senator Whitsett, for the record, I also like wolves and all native wildlife in Oregon. We've heard from the cattlemen time and again that we need to honor the promises ODF&W made. If you read the wolf plan text, nowhere does it call for an automatic delisting in phase two. In the information presented to you by the ODF&W on Tuesday on the screen, the text simply read that the plan calls for a consideration to delist. Speaking of honoring promises and truth, I have been to all the legislative hearings about this issue and watched the proceedings. Time and again, I heard proponents of the bill misrepresent their intent and the effect of the bill. Then on Tuesday, your committee put the bill under appropriate scrutiny and exposed the misrepresentation that allowed the bill to make it through the House. Confronted with those facts, an amendment that would hold the proponents of the bill to what they said, they seemed to not just own up to the real facts and intent, but to embrace them. Oregonians are sensitive to ethical concerns, and it doesn't seem like the legislature should be rewarding this kind of behavior. If, in fact, House Bill 4040 simply affirms the decision by the Oregon Fish and Wildlife Commission to delist gray wolves, then I agree with Senator Przanski that this bill is needless and is a waste of short session limited time. I was very disappointed when the commission made the 4-2 decision to delist wolves. It was very disturbing that the ODF&W and commission staff confused the public by issuing conflicting statements about the comment deadline date. Here's a bit of a timeline for you. November 9th, during the first hour of the commission meeting, the ODF&W submitted their peer review to the record, not abiding with their own timeline. October 30th, the day ODF&W set for all public comment submissions. However, the day prior, October 29th, the ODF&W issued a news release, which I have presented for you, stating that they would be accepting public comments until November 6th. This press release also announces their recommendation to delist. I want to reiterate that this was before their own comment deadline had arrived. On October 29th, the commission were still receiving public comments, which included 25 extensive comments from scientists who had taken an interest in the issue and who were highly critical of ODF&W's wolf status review and delisting decision. I have provided you each with a copy of these submissions, as well as a joint letter that some of them signed on to, which highlights their credentials. In this submission, dated October 29th, you will find the extensive scientific review from these scientists, many of them local Oregonian researchers who challenged the ODF&W science. You will find a legal analysis which shows that delisting wolves at this time would run counter to established state laws and administrative rules. You will find a one-page public comment analysis demonstrating that 96% of those who commented were in support of wolf recovery and continued protections for wolves in Oregon. You will find comments from conservation groups addressing their concerns on public record. All of this is available on the public record on the commission website. I am appalled that the commission ignored all of this, which was submitted on time, but accepted comments from their choice reviewers past their deadline and into the public meeting. I'm almost finished. It appears only 4 of the 29 independent scientists who commented on the plan actually supported delisting. However, even when they raised concerns that ODF&W acknowledged were not addressed, it's noticeable that 2 out of the 4 were from the Idaho Department of Fish and Game, an agency renowned for poor wildlife science and management, and only 1 is a local researcher. I provided you with their biographies in their review summaries. Something that did give me hope was the commission asking the legislature to address the very real and serious problem of wolf poaching. To help address this issue, House Bill 4046 was introduced and eventually amended to include increased penalties for wolf poaching. It was disappointing on Tuesday to hear Representative Barreto say that the purpose of his bill was to support ODF&W when he himself opposed the poaching bill, the very bill that would have addressed the request from the commission. It appears that the poaching bill has not yet made it to the Senate. ODFW Commission did not ask for House Bill 4040, and the Wolf Plan did not call for this. House Bill 4040 restricts the rights of Oregonians to challenge a controversial agency decision, undermines the Oregon Endangered Species Act, and sets a dangerous precedent for questionable science review processes, leading the way on wildlife conservation in our state. Please oppose House Bill 4040. The legislature should not influence judicial review or undermine the Oregon Endangered Species Act. Thank you.
Thank you. Go ahead.
Thank you. Chair Edwards, members of the committee, my name is Brian Posowitz. I am here today on behalf of an organization called Humane Oregon. Humane Oregon was formed in 2014 to help advocate for animal welfare in Oregon's political process and elections. We were actually not involved in the process that led to the delisting of wolves from the state endangered species list, and we don't have a position on whether that was the right decision or the wrong decision. We oppose House Bill 4040 because on its face, at least, it seemed to us that it would prevent judicial review of the State Fish and Wildlife Commission decision. I think that became clear at the hearing Tuesday that the bill would, in fact, have that effect. And actually, having watched the hearing on the House side and the debate on the House floor, I don't think that actually was clear to some of the people who voted for the bill on the House side. We oppose the concept of taking away the right of judicial review on this decision just because we think that judicial review is a very important principle. It's basically there as a check on the actions of government agencies just to verify that they complied with the law and were consistent with the facts. I think a lot of the supporters of this bill would be very reluctant to give up their right to judicial review in other contexts or if the shoe were on the other foot here. So judicial review, although it's often maligned with terms like lawsuits, which nobody likes, all it really does is just has the court review the entire record to make sure that the agency acted in a way that was consistent with the law and the facts. And we can get into what they call standard of review, but it's actually a pretty deferential review of the agency decision. And we just think that on a decision that is this important to so many people and this controversial, that certainly the decision of the agency should be subject to a court review to make sure it was proper. Thank you very much for considering my comments.
Chair Edwards, members of the committee, my name is Rhett Lawrence. I'm the conservation director for the Oregon chapter of the Sierra Club. I'll be brief because I've submitted written testimony through OLIS. Just wanted to hone in on a couple of points that have already been covered in other testimony as well. We did track the decision-making process by the Fish and Wildlife Commission. Didn't like the way the decision came out, but you know, the decision has been made now, and so we believe this bill is, you know, is just unnecessary because you know, the decision has been made. There was, you know, there were comments in previous testimony about honoring a commitment made to proponents of this bill and the Wolf Plan, you know, but certainly there was no commitment ever to run such a decision through the legislature. So we believe that this bill is just unnecessary, treading onto agency territory. Their decision should stand on its own. It does not need any legislative ratification. And then again, on the judicial review, we believe that that this bill does set a bad precedent. I think Senator Dembrough and Senator Przanski were certainly on the right track in their questioning on Tuesday. Senator Dembrough attempted to get the amendment drafted to essentially take the judicial review component out of there, and got the decision, got the memo back from legislative counsel that without that provision, the bill essentially has no meaning. So, you know, again, I think that this bill sets a bad precedent. I think it's unnecessary, and, you know, I don't think the legislature should be passing bills to, you know, swat away pesky lawsuits, which, you know, may or may not have merit, but that's for the court to decide. So we would certainly, you know, urge this committee to oppose the bill, and happy to take any questions. Thanks.
Chair Edwards, members of the committee, my name is Christy Split, and I represent the Oregon Conservation Network, a coalition of about 40 organizations statewide that work on a whole host of issues, ranging from wolves to climate change and everything in between. I'm here today to, first of all, make sure that you all know that this bill is an Oregon Conservation Network major threat. That means that all of the groups in the Oregon Conservation Network agreed that this bill was indeed something that rises to our highest level of opposition. This is a process that's generally by consensus, and that was indeed the case with this particular concept. That's a big deal. On Tuesday, Senator Edwards chuckled when Amaruk Weiss, who was part of the original Wolf Management Plan, mentioned that she was there representing all of the groups that care about wolves. Guess what I'm doing right now? Representing all of the groups that care about wolves within the Oregon Conservation Network. We have groups that think that the decision to delist was the right one. We have groups that think that the decision to delist was maybe done with not the best available science, but that didn't really feel like they wanted to get into a litigation situation. And we have groups that did not feel the decision had the best science and therefore did make the decision to use their right to judicial review and make sure that the Fish and Wildlife Commission had indeed used the best available science, which is part of the Wolf Management Plan. So in other words, we have folks that think that they are holding the agency accountable to the Wolf Plan by carrying out the litigation. So this room is filled with hardworking folks who drove a long way to be here. I thank you for being here. I don't mean my disagreement on this issue to have any sort of disrespect. The Wolf Management Plan represents what can happen when we do the hard work together, when various groups come together and make an agreement. Unfortunately, this bill doesn't do that. I would prefer to see something that has that spirit of cooperation if the legislature is going to weigh in on the Wolf Management Plan, which is exactly what this bill does. I also want to thank the folks in this room who've done a lot to decrease wolf depredation through non-lethal measures. I know that there's been a lot of work in Eastern Oregon, and I care deeply about that work and just want to say thank you to everybody here for doing that. I also just want to make sure that to build off of a couple of points Stephanie made, I think that as somebody who's been working in this building, this is my 10th year, I'm not sure I've ever seen a bill that had so much misunderstanding about what the bill actually did moving through a chamber. I had one-on-one meetings with over 20 legislators where I brought the bill in and had them actually look at it. As you know, I wish that you all read every bill, but I know that that's not always the case. And people were surprised when they read it what the bill actually did, particularly the amended version. And it was just frankly a huge relief to have a real conversation here on Tuesday about what the bill does. And I want to thank all of you for having that and engaging in that very tough conversation. I also wanted to point out and sent to OLIS the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife peer review summary. I have that right here if you wanted to pull it up. I'm just going to share a few observations that I had. And I want to be really clear. While I am a proud coach of the Lincoln High School Constitution team, reigning state champions, I am not a lawyer. And while I generally enjoy science, just asked my physics teacher for my junior year of high school, I am not a scientist. But when I read the scientific review, the peer review, it's pretty clear to me, just common sense, as a person who has worked in this place for a while, and I actually spent last night talking to everybody I knew that was a scientist to see what they thought of this peer review, and just wanted to flag a few things. What you were told on the record on Tuesday night is that there were a variety of academics from all over the country that had weighed in on this peer review. There's actually two out of the four scientists that weighed in that are academics, one of whom is in Copenhagen, the University of Copenhagen, and the other close by in Idaho. There's also two agency folks, one from Idaho Department of Fish and Game, and the other from a federal agency. And I just want to raise that point because this isn't exactly what I got the vibe about the peer review from the hearing on Tuesday, so I dug in a little bit. And there's also some interesting lines in here that I just thought were, I mean, this is in the summary that the ODF&W folks put out. First of all, Joe Bull, a doctor from the University of Copenhagen, is also the co-author of the published model that ODF&W used to base their science on, which seems like one of the four people had a pretty, maybe sort of a conflict of interest in making the peer review, in my opinion. Again, not a science, not a lawyer, just common sense here. And then looking through some of the comments that they took from the scientists, here's a guy, Dr. John Horn says, I didn't take much time to say all the good stuff I was thinking or really read the discussion, so in the interest of time, here you go. So it sort of sounds like it didn't get a lot of attention, right? And then at the end, at the summary of all of this, the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife says, based on our review of comments received, there was only one major comment related to the technical application of our PVA. We provide a response to this comment and contend that our approach is sound. And therefore, the one negative comment they get, they just say, we disagree. So I just wanted to make sure that I flagged this for you to look in more closely. If the legislature wants to weigh in and make a decision confirming the act of the agency and wants to think about the science, I wanted to make sure that I at least walked through why our folks saw this document and were concerned enough, some of them, to litigate. So thank you very much for your time and attention. Like I said, the discussion on Tuesday, and I'm sure the discussion today, was robust and refreshing and open and honest. Thank you for that.
Thank you each. I know there was a lot of, I would agree. While I tend, I mean, I'm hearing the bill and we are having hearings on the bill because I tend to agree with the sentiments of the bill. I also agree that everything wasn't above board, and I wanted everything laid out on the table in terms of why we have the bill, what the intent of the bill is to do, and also, I mean, I'm interested in knowing where different groups stand on the wolf management plan, because part of this is about the underlying. And actually, I'm asking each of you, like, where do your organizations stand on the actual wolf management plan? Brian, then Stephanie, then Rhett.
Sure. Chair Edwards, our organization has not looked at that or taken a position on it. We were concerned just about the judicial review aspect of this bill. But it's something we're very much interested in, and I think it's something we will review, and I'd be happy to communicate to you our thoughts about it.
Stephanie.
Senator Edwards, Chair Edwards, I am here today representing myself. I have read the Wolf Plan, and I do agree with it, and I'm looking forward to the Wolf Plan review happening soon.
Chair Edwards, I think we're sort of in the same position at the Sierra Club. We were involved in assessing the Wolf Plan when it was created 10 years ago. Feel like it should be allowed to play out, and agree with how it was put together, the collaborative effort that went into it. I think we support the Wolf Plan and support the review processes that were put in place as part of crafting that plan.
Chair Edwards, members of the committee, I am very confident that I can speak for a few groups that are within the Oregon Conservation Network that testified here on Tuesday, and maybe some that didn't testify. I know that that Cascadia Wildlands and Center for Biological Diversity and Oregon Wild, as well as Defenders of Wildlife, have all worked within the Oregon Wolf Plan. Some of them were, I'm not sure where Amaruk was working at the time, but she was obviously party to the original Wolf Plan and works now at Center for Biological Diversity. When I do any writing on an issue, I have to make sure that everybody agrees to it that cares about that issue. And I got agreement on an email that went out that talked about the fact that we support, collectively, the Oregon Conservation Network supports the Wolf Plan, is eager to be part of the revision, which is supposed to happen this year, and looks forward to working with folks in this room, folks that aren't here today, to do the right thing for hopefully everybody.
And I think that's, before we go to other panelists for questions, I mean, that is one of the central questions here is, as we go into the Wolf Plan review, is a lawsuit, or as you call a judicial review, hanging over the cattlemen as that process is carrying forward, and are they getting leveraged into changes to the Wolf Plan, which they're not excited about the Wolf Plan, but they've agreed to live with it. I mean, there are plenty of people in the room probably right now that we see no wolves in the state of Oregon. I'm not one of them. I hope to see recovery of wolves throughout the state. But I'm also sensitive to the fact that in Eugene, Oregon, I'm probably not going to have to live with wolves, and I don't have a livelihood that is going to be significantly impacted by wolves. So I'm sensitive to that reality. Mm-hmm. And the Oregon Wolf Plan has been a really hard thing to get to, and it feels like this lawsuit is an effort to really drive changes to parts of the Wolf Plan that conservation interests aren't comfortable with.
So, Chair Edwards, members of the committee, since the groups that are privy to or part of the litigation aren't here today, I just want to say a couple of things in response to that. I think one is that we care deeply about science, and we want to make sure that the peer review of the science is held in high regard. We want to make sure that peer review is appropriate and matches best practices. We didn't feel that was the case, and we want to make sure as we go through the next phases of the Oregon Wolf Plan that we do have the right science. And my understanding in talking to the folks, that is what they're hoping to, that's one of the reasons, if not the main reason, that they put forward the lawsuit. I also just want to say, and they're probably watching and going, why are you speaking on our behalf? But I'm going to try it anyway. The other thing I wanted to flag is that this morning, the Court of Appeals, with just some timing that you couldn't imagine, actually this morning made the Oregon Cattlemen Association and the Oregon Farm Bureau parties to the lawsuit. That was not the case on Tuesday, and you actually heard a lot about frustration that they wouldn't be part of settlement conversations if that did happen in this particular case. They would be part of those settlement conversations just like they were a few years ago after there was another situation involving litigation and wolves.
Mr. Chair. Yeah, Senator, what's that?
It's my understanding that then each of you are primarily opposed of this bill on procedural plans. You're not opposed to the decision of the Oregon Department of Forest of Fish and Wildlife scientists. You're just your primary. That's what your testimony is. But particularly, Ms. Split, I'm interested in your criticism of the peer review and peer review process. Could you give us a detailed description of what a good peer review process is?
It's a good question, Chair Edwards, Senator Whitsitt. Last night I got the idea of digging into this and talked to some folks and actually asked for that information. I will get back to you. I have friends that are scientists that were going to send me stuff. Maybe they already have. Because like I said, I was just giving my common sense read of it, and I was very clear that I'm not personally a scientist, but I will send something about the best practices because I did ask for that, and we'll get that to the whole committee.
If I might share a little bit of a peer review process.
Please, thank you, sir.
Scientists are asked to participate in a peer review process, and it's quite a responsibility because they are asked to look at every aspect of the scientific evidence and the scientific conclusions and how they got there, and then try to pick it apart. That's what they're designed to do. So when you read a peer review and it's got these, you know, little nitpicky things all the way through it, that's what they are precisely. They're trying to make sure that the science is correct and that these are the things that you might want to look at. The peer review, what I've seen here is that pretty much uniformly they said, you know, this is a pretty good process. So when you start looking at a peer review and trying to find all the little pieces, that's what they're not even paid to do it usually. They do it on as part of the scientific community. But if you put a lot of credibility into all the little picky things, that's what they're asked to do, to make sure that every I is dotted and every T is crossed in the opinion. And so I think that that your criticism might have been misplaced from the standpoint of misunderstanding what a peer review actually is. Thank you.
Thank you for the feedback, sir.
Mr. Chair. Ms. Taylor, you provided us with this. Are you the one that provided us with this big document?
Yes, I am.
Oh, thank you very much. I started to get into this a little bit, and I apologize for not being here at the earlier public hearing on this. Things happened where I had to be too. But it lists Jennifer Walsh, PhD, on the top left-hand corner of the review, but then it's sincerely signed by Derek E. Lee. So is this a Jennifer Walsh product, or is this Derek Lee?
I printed four copies because I didn't see you on Tuesday, and the person outside had trouble with a copying machine, so I'm not sure what you're looking at there.
I was just trying to determine because it starts with her name and it ends sincerely Derek E. Lee, so I was trying to ascertain who the author was. So my assumption would be that the author would be Derek E. Lee. Ms. Split, you talked about scientific review, and Derek E. Lee gave some synopsis of this project. And let me see if my expertise has mostly focused on seabirds and other marine predators, in addition to giraffes. Now, one would think that probably would not be the most, although he is a statistical analysis person, he has done some, obviously, some really good work, but I wouldn't know that would be a real accurate peer review from a guy that knows about giraffes and seabirds and marine predators for your wolf program. So when we look at peer review, I think we would probably be benefited if we had people that were experts in the wolf field. And a follow-up, please.
Yeah.
I'm going to screw this up. Posowitz, I was close. Judicial review is wonderful. As a matter of fact, there's many bills passing through this body this month that I would love to have judicial review on, because there are a lot of intricate moving parts in a lot of these bills that people don't understand. And this bill seems to be one that I question why this one would be so important for judicial review when we have an opportunity that the ODFNW has delisted the wolf, but yet the wolf will be managed and will have a full lifespan, and probably in 10 years we might have 100 pairs or 150 pairs of animals. So what would be the importance of this bill having judicial review over some of the other more intricate bills that we have?
Chair Edwards, Senator Olson. So the concept of judicial review that I was referring to deals with court review of government agency decisions. And there isn't a concept of judicial review that I know of legislative decisions other than review of whether they're constitutional or something like that. So I was talking about review by the court, judicial review, of the decision by the Fish and Wildlife Commission to take wolves off the Oregon Endangered Species List. I was not talking about judicial review of this bill. I don't think this bill would be subject to any kind of judicial review. And our take on that is just that there's a lot of people with really strong feelings about whether that delisting was right or wrong. And it seems to me that letting a court look at the whole record, decide whether it complied with the law and the facts, would be a good thing, that it would settle the conflict. And I don't, you know, I'm not involved in the litigation, Chair Edwards, so I can't tell you, you know, how it might impact the wolf management plan. But as I understand it, there's not much difference right now in terms of how wolves are managed, whether they're listed or not, when we're in this phase two of the wolf management plan. That it will become an issue down the road, and the review may very well be done by then.
Follow up?
Yeah.
I kind of agree with some of the things you said, but I also believe that we, the body, are kind of like your judicial review. Did they do it right? Did they do it as they were supposed to by the rules that we've laid out from years past? And apparently, and I apologize for this, apparently there has been precedence because we have delisted another species. And so I think that we are those arbiters to see, was this done right or wasn't this? And if we get into the process of every decision that we as legislatures make to have judicial review, we're in a deep mess. We're in deep caca.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So anyhow, that was my statement on that. So thank you very much.
Okay.
Thanks. I would kind of take a my feelings are similar to yours, Senator, but they're also very different in that, you know, the question is, you know, right now we're being asked through this bill to intervene in the process, right? I mean, I think that judicial review in this kind of situation is not unusual. And I don't know if it was ever articulated as the plan was being developed, but, you know, I doubt that it was, as the plan was developed, it was designed to preclude, you know, some judicial review at the end. Right? I mean, the issue for us is when we get involved with this, we don't have the ability to be the impartial arbiter that a judge would be, right? I mean, we have all sorts of issues that we have to take into consideration just because of, you know, we're representing constituencies and constituents and, you know, just the, you know, the politics that are involved in this. And so that's what makes me, you know, reluctant to get involved because, you know, I would disagree that we are the equivalent of judicial review in that sense. That's the whole reason we have a judicial branch.
Mr. Chair.
Yeah.
I like your comment that we're similar but not because obviously in a statement you just made, we are totally different. Because I look at the benefit of all Oregonians, could care less what the party is, what their politics are. I don't care. If it's a good bill, I'll support it. If it's a bad bill, I won't. From what I've seen in the study I've done, and people must know that I do my research, I find this bill to be appropriate, but still within good bounds so that we can take care of the wolves. Because I don't want to make the wolves go extinct again. Nobody does. Nobody on this panel does. But the fact of the matter is that a bill of this importance, politics to me means absolutely nothing. It's what's good for Oregon, and that's the way we should look at this bill. Is it good for Oregon or isn't it? Does it benefit only a small group or does it benefit the whole? And if it doesn't benefit the whole, then we shouldn't even be hearing this bill. But we're hearing this bill, so someone determined that this benefits the whole, and that's where I come from as a politician, which is weird. Sure, absolutely.
Please.
Chair Edwards.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Senator Olson.
No.
I just want to remind you that the ODF&W Commission did not ask for this bill. It's a special interest group that asked for this bill. And if this bill does nothing but just ratifies their decision, then it's a pointless bill. It really doesn't affect the way the ODF&W is going to carry out their wolf plan or management.
I'll ask the question back to her then. Ma'am, you need to sit with me for a whole day, and you'll find that most of the bills we look at are brought by individuals or people to benefit something they want, and we're doing a ton of it. And, you know, environmentalists have their causes. The non-environmentalists, the cattlemen, everybody has a cause, and everybody comes down here, and we as legislatures have 10,000 people outside our doors with problems and concerns and issues that they want fixed. They expect us to be experts. So what we do as legislators is try to get the most input of information we can and make a decision that we feel is best for Oregon. At least that's the way the process should work. To say that it wasn't brought by ODFW, I can understand that, but we bring bills all the time that aren't brought by ODFW or anyone in particular. But there are people out there that want things done, and they want it done their way. And it's our job to make sure is their way the right way.
Senator Dembrough, then Senator Whitsitt. Yeah,
thank you. Let me clarify. When I mentioned that there are political issues here, I wasn't thinking of partisan politics, but rather, you know, the sense of, you know, I know when the bill was being debated over on the other side, one of the reasons that some people supported it was that they wanted to put the message out that they supported rural Oregon, right? It got sort of tied up in this, you know, larger issue of, you know, urban versus rural, right? Which, you know, I think is inevitable in something like this. I would rather have a case like this decided by someone who doesn't have to think in those terms, right? We have to think about, you know, that all the laws that we're passing and, you know, how do we, you know, if we're taking a position here, we want to make it clear that, you know, we are, you know, we do care about all Oregonians. I think somebody, you know, a judge in a case, presumably, you know, is not dealing with that kind of thing. That person is just focusing on, looking at was the process followed, is the science good, et cetera, et cetera. And I think it makes sense, for me, irrespective of what the context of the issue is, that we let that process play out. There could conceivably be some situation in which you had a really, you know, pressing need to move on something, you know, in some kind of extraordinary circumstance, you know, perhaps, although, you know, off the top of my head, I can't think of one, but it, where, you know, the legislature may need to take an immediate action. But we certainly didn't get the sense at the last hearing that we're in that kind of situation here, where this is a, you know, a very time-sensitive kind of situation.
Senator, what's it?
Thank you. More of a comment. You talk about environmental advocacy. The livestock industry in Oregon is the primary environmental advocacy for wildlife in the state of Oregon. They provide habitat. They provide feed. They provide water. And they are the most effective. If you want to look where the wildlife is, most of it is at the edge of or on private land. So I think that would be something to take home with you. I mean, these people that that you're opposing so vigorously here are the people who actually provide the habitat for the wildlife.
Any other questions for the panel? Thank you each for being here and providing your sincere testimony on this issue.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And then the last panel that we have is Paul, Don Hefner, Tim Reeves, and Marianne Nash.
Chair Edwards, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Al Elkins with the Oregon Hunters Association. Paul was on the schedule to be here at 6 tonight, so he cannot be here. The message he would deliver is the Oregon Hunters Association is in support of the bill and hope gets out of the committee. Our focus has been on wildlife herds, elk and deer. We were a member of the work group that put the plan together originally and have worked with the cattlemen and the department during the years in relation to the plan, and we would like to see it go forward, the bill go forward. Thank you.
Chair Edwards, members of the committee, my name is Marianne Nash, here today on behalf of the Oregon Farm Bureau in support of House Bill 4040. There's several points I wanted to make, so I'll try to make them as quickly and concisely as possible. We've heard a lot of debate this week about delisting and the Wolf Plan and the litigation and the relationship of those three things to each other, so I wanted to talk about them individually and also in relation to each other. In regards to the listing decision, delisting has occurred, and we're simply asking today for ratification to show legislative faith in the decision of the commission that was appointed by the governor to make this decision. You heard a lot of discussion in the earlier panel about peer review. I think that's a bit of a red herring argument. We believe that adequate peer review was done, but I just want to make clear that if you look at the Oregon Endangered Species Act, and that's ORS 496.176, the review is to be made upon the best available scientific information and other biological data. And the department takes this to mean that the information must be documented and verifiable information. And in the listing decision and the delisting decision, those are made on the basis of four criterion. And I recently put into the record the biological status review that discusses those criterion with the best available data and leads the department to its recommendation that delisting is appropriate. Those factors definitely involve a heavy amount of science, but the department absolutely had that science and supported their decision in a 38-page opinion about why delisting was appropriate. Just to go through, because I don't think anybody has talked it too in-depth about the factors, those look at whether the species is not now or not likely in the foreseeable future to be in danger of becoming extinct in a significant portion of its range in Oregon or in danger of becoming endangered. They look at whether the species' natural reproductive and potential is in danger of failure due to limited population numbers, disease, predation, or other natural or human-related factors, that the populations are not undergoing imminent or active deterioration of range or primary habitat, and overutilization of the species or its habitat for commercial, scientific, recreational, or educational purposes is not occurring or likely to occur, and that existing regulatory protections are adequate to protect the species. These are very similar to factors that you find at the federal level. One of the really important ones in this case, and this now gets us to the Wolf Plan, is the protections in place in the existing Wolf Plan. To be clear, those protections do not apply or do not change at all with this decision. This decision has not altered the Wolf Plan, does not seek to alter the Wolf Plan. It simply delists the species and refers to the Wolf Plan. As I'm sure you all know, Phase 1 wolf management is in place in Western Oregon, which provides the exact same protections for the species as if they were listed. And those species are also federally protected if they're west of Highway 395. For the populations on the east side, those have already moved into Phase 2 management. Again, existing management that will not change. And that is where I think the crux of the issue becomes for us. So before the delisting decision occurred, we were involved in several conversations from the groups that were trying to prevent delisting, and they indicated that they didn't like the existing Phase 2 protections and would rather see Phase 1 protections continue throughout the duration of the plan. And that's our concern with the litigation, is that that is the end result sought. As you all know, you know, we're talking about the importance of judicial review. Of course it's important, and of course it has a role to play, but increasingly we're seeing it used as a vehicle for groups to sue the government, sue an agency whose decision that they disagree with, and enter into private settlement discussions where the process is foreclosed from public input and involvement, and where outside interests don't have an opportunity to engage and broad stakeholders aren't engaged. It's just the group and the federal or state agencies involved. Most litigation settles these days, so we can talk a lot about the importance of judicial review and undergoing judicial review, but when we're talking practicalities, we're talking settlement. And yes, we are, Oregon Farm Bureau and Oregon Cattlemen's Association are newly minted interveners in this lawsuit. That doesn't necessarily mean we would be part of settlement discussions. That doesn't necessarily mean we would have to be at the table. Plaintiff has an absolute right to dismiss its lawsuit if it's gotten its objectives accomplished in whatever manner it chooses. In ESA cases, you don't have counterclaims. And so we would maybe not be at the table. And that is a big concern for us, because we've seen it happen before. And we've seen settlement drive wolf management in Oregon without a broad stakeholder process and without broad agreement as to what wolf management objectives are. So we really would like to see the legislature stand up and say, we believe in broad public process. We believe everybody has a right to be heard, and we believe in transparency. And so we believe that we should uphold the wolf plan and honor the commitments made in the wolf plan, and ratify the delisting process, which occurred through full public process with good information, with good science, with everybody's viewpoints being heard, and the commission arrived at its decision to delist. We've talked a little bit before about precedents. I will note that this is not an unprecedented action. It's House Bill 2881, came out of the 2005 legislative session. It passed unanimously, and it delisted the Aleutian Canadian goose. And that one is actually a bit of a reverse scenario, because it was first legislatively delisted, and then the commission wanted to look at and ratify that decision by the legislature, and they did so subsequently. So in conclusion, what we're asking for is upholding a transparent public process and not allowing closed-door negotiations to alter wolf management in Oregon and alter the important protections that producers rely on and is so essential to their continued faith in the wolf plan. I can't tell you how many calls I've gotten from people that are concerned about what's going on with compensation, what's going on with delisting. Are people paying attention to us on wolves? Are people feeling the struggle that we're feeling and really understanding the importance of knowing what management looks like and knowing what our rights and responsibilities are and knowing how we can move forward and uphold those? And I think we have to show faith in the wolf plan and faith in the process to continue to ask producers to have faith in the state and their management of wolves. So with that, I'll conclude and take any questions.
Question.
Yep. Al, you represent hunters, right?
Right.
I'm a fisherman myself, and I know that all the groups that I've worked with and been part of and actually been president of are tremendous conservationists and environmentalists.
Yes.
Would you say that's the same for your group?
Yes, Mr. Chair, Senator Olson, I would say that. We put over $250,000 a year in habitat conservation of our own money in habitat conservation projects around the state for deer and elk herds.
Which the point of follow up?
Yeah.
The point I'm trying to make is the fact that we understand the outdoors, we understand the our sport, and the only way to maintain our sport is to take care of our sport. Is that not correct?
Yes. Chair Edwards, Senator Olson, the sport and to take care of our wildlife populations.
And Philip?
Yeah.
Mary Ann, thank you very much for your comments. Once again, to me, farmers are the stock and lifeblood of America. They take care of what they do. They have to, because they can't make a livelihood if they don't. Is that not correct?
Chair Edwards, Vice Chair Olson, absolutely. And we've really seen that with this issue. I mean, the producer's primary concern, of course, is protecting their livestock. And I am actually the daughter of a cattle rancher, and I can't tell you how many nights my dad would stay up so concerned about the health of his animals. And out, you know, he'd check heifers every 2 hours when they were calving, and we had cougar and coyote issues in the same. And you have to be vigilant, and you have to keep keep an eye on your animals, because not only are their livelihood, but you're connected to them as well. Every producer I know cares so deeply for their animals.
Thank you.
Senator Pazanski.
Thank you. Marianne, I just want to follow up, because to me, I hear process, and I think everyone talks about process. So what we know at this point, we have a public process that allows for opponents, in this case, challenging an executive branch order. And the public process says that that can be reviewed by the judicial branch. Mm-hmm. And that's what I hear that's happening. So let's just flip this around. Let's just say ODFW was asked to delist. They said, no, we're not going to delist. And the proponents to delisting said, wait a second, there's peer review. There's all this that says that it should have happened. Are you saying that we should intervene with the legislature and say, nope, we're not going to let you have the public process. Nope, you can't go to the judicial branch, and we're going to just shut it down?
Chair Edwards, Senator Pazanski, I think that's a really great question, because that is definitely not our intent. I think, as we've all said, judicial review plays a critical component in our governmental system. It's essential. However, in a case like this one, where we know and have previous evidence of a stated intent to use litigation under the Oregon Endangered Species Act, we know management isn't changing. We know there's no real consequence. The true objective is to force a change in wolf management through settlement. And when there's a demonstrated history of that, and when there is a real risk of that, I do think legislative intervention is appropriate to avoid closed-door negotiations. We talk a lot about transparency. And I think in an issue as heated as this one, it's really important that when we're talking about wolf management in Oregon, we have all the stakeholders at the table, all of the stakeholders who said they're part of this, who said they want to uphold this. They need to be part of those conversations. And when you have private litigation, you have one group talking with the agency, and if the agency eventually gets to a point where they say, okay, yeah, we can do that and we'll change the rules, we have no absolute right to be included in that process and no guarantee that we would be.
So if I can follow up. And so what premise do you have that ODFW is going to somehow cave in, from what I'm hearing, as compared to, if they believe in what they did and they've got it done right, why wouldn't they on the merits just say, we're going to let the judicial process work, we're going to come out on top, and we'll be done with it?
Chair Edwards, Senator Pazanski, fingers crossed that they will. And in our intervention, we intend to support them legally in those arguments. But we know litigation's expensive. We know agencies have to pay for it. And we know that budgets are increasingly tight in agencies. And we have seen an increase in that driving conversations towards settlement, because it's really expensive to litigate a case, and particularly one involving science.
What type of timeline would we expect, and I ask this for the attorneys in the room, what type of timeline might we expect for, and I invite you to answer that, Marianne, or attorneys from the other side as well. I mean, are we talking about this process, are we talking about a 60-day process, or are we talking about a 3-year process?
Chair Edwards, Senator Pazanski, and particularly, so this is the first appeal is to Court of Appeals, and then obviously they could go to the Supreme Court. In my experience, those are couple-year processes, and you might get to your briefing and your oral argument in 4 or 5 months, depending on attorney schedules and who asks for continuances and stuff. But I think the ultimate decision can also be quite a ways down the road, depending on the court's workload and you know what extenuating factors are on the case. But if you're talking about the full appellate process, it's at least a couple of years.
I have a question. I've been kind of searching through on the computer, but haven't found. So there's been reference to a bill last year that would legislatively have delisted the wolf. I thought I heard somebody say that was supported by the Cattlemen's Association. Did the Farm Bureau have a position on that bill to legislatively delist the wolf?
Chair Edwards, Senator Dembrough, I believe we testified in support of it. That was Jenny's issue last year, but I'm 99% sure that we testified in support of it, and we supported the concept then.
So isn't that sort of at odds with where you are now? You know, since then you were asking the legislature to right. Sort of short-circuit the process? So where is the consistency there?
So Chair Edwards, Senator Dimbrow, when phase two is hit, the Wolf Plan talks about delisting. And so I think the concept was phase two is hit, delisting should occur. And I think the legislature rightfully said, well, let's see what the commission, you know, see what the commission's analysis looks like. I think that's, that was a fair point to make. I think the end goal has always been the same, which is we're in phase two management. Populations are growing. Delisting is appropriate, but I think now with the biological status review and all of the science behind it, it's a stronger position. I don't view it as inconsistent, but I do think at this point there's the full wealth of information supporting that decision, whereas before it was, hey, the Wolf Plan says it should be, so let's make it.
I think the one consistency in all of this is that conservationists will consistently want more wolves and ranchers will consistently want fewer wolves, yeah. Which is actually why I think that it's a matter of important public policy, and I would rather it not be subject to a court process and negotiations, but I think we're the body to do that. But I know that not everybody shares.
We're in
opinion.
A different place.
Senator, what's it?
I think, Mr. Chair, I think your comment is fair. I think that you add something onto it. I don't believe that most cattlemen and livestock producers are in a position now to believe that there's any possibility of exterminating wolves. But equally important is their ability to manage their livestock, to manage that predation on their livestock. And as I said yesterday or 2 days ago or whenever it was, we're having fun here. But I mean, there's a wolf in my backyard and I'm going to go home. And legally, I can't defend. I was told that I can't defend my dog against the wolf. I mean, you're going to have to let him eat him. I guess I can. We would defend my wife against the wolf if I did without getting a permit. But you know, I mean, the answer to say, hey, sure, you can defend your livestock as soon as you get a permit. Well, that's a little bit absurd. So, as a matter of defending it in the act. So, I think that's one of the things that the livestock producers are really looking for now is the ability to be able to manage their livestock and to be able to manage that predation on their livestock in a reasonable manner other than waving a flag at them or something.
Other questions for the panel or comments to the panel? Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you both for being here. That concludes everybody that had signed up at the last meeting. We are not going to be working this bill today. You guys, I think if we were to have a vote today, you could probably guess how it would come out, but we are not going to be working the bill today. I do imagine that we will be working the bill on Tuesday, next Tuesday, but that will be pending other discussions. So thank you all for being here and taking the interest in the issue. We are going to close the public hearing on House Bill 4040A. And anything from committee members, announcements, anything? Okay. So we are done for today and adjourned.